This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 204 for Wednesday, August 10th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we're into. We talk about all kinds of things, from movies and video games to apps and websites and all kinds of fun stuff. Joining me tonight, as he often does, on the second week of the month, Mr. Lou Page. Welcome back, sir.
Howdy, howdy.
It's good to have you.
Good to be here.
And it's apt that you're here because you are one of the video gaming co-hosts that I have.
Yes.
And I've had video games on the brain this week. And I have no time to play them, so I'm living vicariously through friends who can. So we're gonna talk about a few things, get some No Man's Sky happening, and we've got some Nintendo news. But first, I have to make an important announcement, and I will reiterate this at the end of the show as well. But while you're listening to us, if you'd like to go to forgepublishing.com and click on the link that says Back the Book, which is the new Kickstarter for Piper Thibodeau's daily paintings, we're back on Kickstarter. We launched yesterday at about noon Pacific, and things are going fantastic this time around. We were coming up shy on our original goal in July, so Piper and I discussed it, and we decided to end the campaign, regroup, rethink, take a look at what backers wanted, and launch a new campaign, which has a lot of very similar things. If you had backed us before and you wanted a hardcover book in a print, you can absolutely do that the second time around. One of the things that was, I think, hurting us, because Piper's demographic tends to be of, we'll say, the youthful persuasion, is that shipping a hardcover book around the world, turns out it's expensive, and there's no way around it. We're dealing with Sales Geek and Dave Michael in the States for fulfilling the book, and I know that he's giving us the best rates he possibly can, but
yep.
Sending a hardcover book to Australia is $45 Canadian, and there's just no way around it. However, if you want to save a few dollars, we have a soft cover version available. So the hardcover was $60 plus shipping. So it comes out to be like $100 or more.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's a big, beautiful book. So I personally think it's worth it, but I understand that people are on budgets. So the soft cover book is $40 and shipping for it is $35 international, only $25 to Canada, and even less again to the States. So previously, a hardcover book in the States was 11. A softcover book in the States is only 8. So it is cheaper to ship in the continental U.S. That's just the way that USPS works.
Yeah.
And for those who have asked, there is an FAQ on the Kickstarter. We are printing and shipping from the U.S. because we have the data that says that 70% of Piper's fans and followers actually live in the U.S. So it makes a lot of sense to have everything close by for them and kind of go from there. So things are going very, very well. We backed over 50% in the first 24 hours. We are currently at 55%. Our new goal is $40,000, and we are at around $22,000 right now in the first day. So we are going to go for 2 weeks. It's a short campaign because in order to meet the original distribution goal of the fall, I have to get cracking on this book, which means that we have to back sooner than later. So putting up a Kickstarter for another month just wasn't an option for our schedule, and we didn't want to disappoint the backers that had put their pledge forward in July expecting a book in the fall, only to have us have to delay another month and a half. So if we can get things going, then the sooner we back, the better. So please, if you care to, share forgepublishing.com with your friends and family who are into art books. Nudge a coworker and say, hey, look at this. It's really cool. If you happen to live in the States, then you're going to have, you know, cheap shipping. And the whole Kickstarter, which we wanted to be very careful to remind everybody this time around, is actually in Canadian dollars because my company, Forge Publishing, is Canadian. So The exchange rate is about $1.30, which is crazy, which means that a $60 book is about 46 US. So if you look at it and go, ooh, 60 is a little bit steep, it's actually not 60, depending on what country you're from. Canada's just not having a great economy right now.
No, it is not.
So our exchange rate is kind of crappy. It works really well if you are from another country and you are shopping in Canada. So please, international shoppers, come on over. and there are also non-book rewards. There are digital books, which don't cost anything to ship. And there are some prints and print packages that you can get at the $40 level. And that will save you on shipping as well. If you happen to be just too far away and the shipping is just gross, you can look at the prints, because prints don't really cost that much to ship because they're flat. Usually it's the thickness of the package that really jams the shipping. There's weight, but there's a wide weight range. It's the thickness that really kind of gets you, because once you go into a box, you're dealing with lots of money. So unless you're Amazon. So that is my big announcement. We are back on Kickstarter. I really want to make this book for Piper. She has been working her butt off this summer. And I think that she deserves to have an art book out there for everybody to enjoy and for her to sell for the next few years. So if you like her work, then you can find her at Piper_Thibodeau on Twitter. You can also just go to PiperThibodeau.com and it links to everything that she's doing, including the Kickstarter. So she's easy to find, and I will explain it all again at the end of the show in a much shorter way. So yeah, that's what's new with me. That's been my week. It's basically been the pre-launch and the launch of the Kickstarter. So what's new with you, man?
What's new with me? I went to a baseball game this weekend, and I don't like baseball.
Okay.
My wife, the company my wife works for, has season tickets for the local baseball team. They're just a farm team for the Red Sox. And every year, a player or two goes to the Red Sox and plays as like a substitute player for a season or two. And because they have season tickets, we got a couple tickets. And Saturday night was Star Wars night. So they had a costume contest. The mascot came out in Jedi robes. And
I didn't know baseball teams did this.
Down here they do. It's sort of a new thing they've been doing the last few years. But they had they got the volunteers from the 501st Stormtrooper Division to come out and shake people's hands and wander the field when the players weren't out there and stuff. It was a lot of fun, actually. They did Star Wars trivia. If anybody saw my Twitter account, I was hashtagging and doing stuff, because if you knew the answer to all their trivia questions, you could win prizes. Oh, I didn't cool. win anything. I didn't win anything, but I knew all the answers before anybody else.
Well, I know there's a huge crossover contingent between baseball nerds and like sci-fi comic nerds, because baseball is a heavy statistics sport.
Yeah, it was very neat. Baseball's not my thing, so it was like, oh yeah, I watched them play baseball, and that was okay. But all the Star Wars stuff that happened between innings was really fun. Like, they had stormtroopers come out and capture the mascot, who was dressed as a Jedi, and like take him away like they were taking him to a detention center.
Nice.
And then he escaped and he got away, and the stormtroopers were chasing him across the field. They did all this neat stuff, and it was really fun.
I imagine it's pretty cool for kids too. Like, if you're 10, like, that's fun.
Oh, they were bringing the kids out on the field to shake hands with the mascot and play games and win prizes and stuff.
That's cool.
It was really fun to watch.
So how long is a baseball game when you go to see it live?
They're about 2.5 hours.
Well, that's not too bad.
Nope.
I've gone to longer movies. I like the idea of organizations like the 501st doing stuff like that for kids and coming out, because Tom Racine was on Comics Coast to Coast last week, and he was talking about San Diego Comic-Con, and he cosplayed as Obi-Wan Kenobi for the first time.
Right.
Not just the first time as Obi-Wan, his first time cosplaying ever, period. So he was explaining that because of that, he was able to connect a lot easier with cosplayers because he was in costume. So he did a bunch of interviews, and if I think about it, I'll put the link in the show notes. I can't remember off the top of my head. Something nerd. If you go to tomracine.com, you will find all of his stuff. It's R-A-C-I-N-E. And he was saying that it's really cool to be walking around con, and just every once in a while you'll see like a Darth Vader with like a half dozen stormtroopers walk by in formation. Like they'll just march through the main foyer just for fun.
Yep.
Like it just, you know, that would definitely, the stark visuals of the black and white and the everybody marching in, you know, in sequence together would just, that would be pretty cool, I think, to see. I don't know if I'd necessarily be pulled over by people like doing fake sword fights or posing for pictures, but just stuff like that I think would be,
yeah,
would be interesting. There was a video, I don't know, I remember what Comic-Con, it might have been Salt Lake City or it might have been Emerald City Comic-Con, but somebody had dressed up their kid as Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
And Kylo Ren, this kid, decided to just kick the crap out of a cardboard box. Like, yep, he was wailing on his lightsaber and just doing all that kind of stuff.
I think I've seen this.
Yeah, and then a stormtrooper was walking by, and he comes up to this kid, and the stormtrooper doesn't realize that there's filming going on. So somebody, some parent is filming this kid just destroying this box, and the stormtrooper kind of looks up and then just 180s and goes the other way. Like, it's just, you know, just right on cue. Stuff like that is just, that kind of thing is just fun and priceless. And I've never cosplayed, and if I did, I would probably do something classic like a stormtrooper, something with a mask. I wouldn't want to wear makeup and stuff like that.
Yeah, no.
So, but I do like the idea of having, I just like the idea of having a stormtrooper helmet on and looking at people and just cocking your head kind of 45 degrees. What?
I appreciate the people that do dress up. It is not for me. I'm not a costume person.
I would be if it was really cool armor. Like if I had put a lot of time into making it, and I could use it for something else other than just walking around a con and getting sweaty. Like if I could participate in something cool, like a charity, or if it was also near Halloween, so I could use it as a Halloween costume and I was going to a party or something like that, that would be cool. But I kind of like the idea of getting up in something like World of Warcraft armor. Like that would be cool.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I don't know, where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the Nintendo thing?
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you like Nintendo? Did you get raised on Nintendo games?
So I grew up on Nintendo games, and when I was on Current Geek a few weeks ago, one of the stories was about this NES set-top thing that they're releasing.
Yep.
And it had, what, 30 games? 40
30 games?
30 games.
30 games for $60.
Yeah, and I mean, so Super Mario 3 and Double Dragon 2, like, sold. For those two games, I will buy this thing. Like, I am absolutely there. Fond memories of that kind of stuff. I had an NES growing up. I didn't have Duck Hunt, but my best friend at the time did. And I didn't play a lot of the classic games, but later on, I remember getting Super Mario 3 and just absolutely loving it. The real nostalgia for me, though, is Super Nintendo, because that was when I had a little bit more free time and more money to buy my own games. So Super Nintendo was definitely where it was at for me. I think that might have been the last console I owned, with the exception of now having a 360. And even that's used, and I bought it just on a whim.
Right.
Because I had games that I couldn't play, and I thought, well, you know, $80, I can pick up a 360, it's fine. So Super Nintendo and Nintendo were the only two consoles I actually bought as a youngster.
I will say, I have owned every Nintendo console that's been out there, except for probably a Virtual Boy, because nobody bought those.
Mm.
But recently, this was a 30-year anniversary for Metroid, and a fan thought that that would be a good point to put out his fan-made remake of Metroid 2, which was only on the original Game Boy. And it is a game that Nintendo has not done anything with since it came out. They've never reissued it. They've never done anything to it. They've remade the first one. They've done all kinds of other stuff. They've never done anything with it. They put that out this week. And it wasn't up 24 hours, and he was given a cease and desist and asked and forced to take it down off his site.
Hmm.
Which I can understand. It's a fan remake of a game. I get it. It hurts their marketing or their brand. Or I get it. Then earlier there was another news article earlier this week or late last week that archive.org, who make archive copies of games and all kinds of stuff, they took the issues of Nintendo Power from issue 1 to the issues of about 2001, 20 years worth, and they archived them and made them available to the public on their website. Nintendo Power, if you didn't know, went out of business in 2012.
I didn't know it lasted that long.
Yeah, it did. It went out just before the Wii U came out, I think. I think like their last issue was like, hey, Wii U's coming. And I think that was the end of the magazine. and they've never done anything with that stuff. There's a couple of the issues that they pulled info from and made strategy guides back in the Super Nintendo days.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. And I think Nintendo Power at one point did some Pokemon strategy guides. But they've never done anything with the magazines themselves. There's no archive copies. Nintendo hasn't shared any of that information or anything. And this stuff is just out there, and they got a cease and desist this week as well. And they were told they needed to take down all the magazines. And while I can understand the fan-made game that's been remade, I can understand them having that pulled. The magazine thing, it's almost too far for me. Why don't they reach out to the guy, buy the rights to his fan-made game, and say, yeah, we're going to just leave this out here for free, but we paid him for this. This isn't a fan-made game. This is a legitimate Nintendo product
now.
A licensed release. And we're just going to leave it here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They could do something like that. And it doesn't hurt their IP at that point. And I'm sure that the guy would take 50 grand, you know?
Yeah.
The Nintendo's got it. It's not, you know.
Yeah. So I'm with you on the split. Like, I mean, I get the decision to cancel or to put the cease and desist on the game. Reason for that, as far as my understanding goes, and this is, I mean, copyright law is foggy from one country to the next. So when you're dealing with international stuff, it's a huge pain in the ass. And it's better, and large international companies are just going to come down hard because they have to.
Right.
This guy might have done something out of love, and it might be fun, and it might be cool. But if they don't squash it, then the next person that does a clone out of China or Japan or Korea that charges money,
they can't sue.
It'll have precedent, right? Lawyers, please feel free to email me and tell me I'm wrong. But from what I understand, they have to go out with a binary approach to this kind of stuff, just because it protects them from real problems down the line. I think also part of it is that this guy that was making a video game based on an IP that was owned by somebody else, I understand that that's a lot of work. You might want to look into copyright stuff before you put the time into a game like that. Like, hey, make the game. The gameplay and the game mechanics, like, it's a platform shooter is a platform shooter. You're not reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
Because that's what Metroid is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just put your own characters in it. Make something up. You know, like, and as a cartoonist, I can tell you that if you change things enough, you can operate under parody.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, case in point, I'll use Piper because she's on my mind. Her work will sometimes be, well, for example, just yesterday or the day before, she did a Pandawan.
Yeah.
Which is a panda Padawan from
Star
Wars. The lightsaber is a glowing piece of bamboo. Cutest thing ever. Technically, Star Wars is copyright, you know, Disney. That's a big company. But there's no pandas in Star Wars. You know, there's pandas in World of Warcraft. But, so she's not really encroaching on any copyright laws. She's making a fan piece, and she's putting a lot of creative effort into making it her own. So it's completely different. And there's nothing says Star Wars on it, right?
Right.
It doesn't say Star Wars Panda by Piper. You know, like it's, you know, nothing to indicate that she's employed by or working for or in association with Disney or Lucasfilm or anything like that. So, if you do your research, then when you're building a game like that and putting the effort in, just make it original. You know, we complain on this show all the time about remakes and stuff. So just, you know, go find an independent artist, find a game developer, and work together, even if it's a game jam. Like, just do something original and go from there, and you will not have to run into takedown notices. Now, the archive stuff,
that just seems overkill.
It seems odd, and I wonder, like, I don't know what the reason would be, because archive.org is not changing, repurposing, selling, or claiming that it like that it is anything but what it says it is. It's an archive right. of Nintendo Power. I loved yeah. Nintendo Power growing up. That was a cool magazine. Yeah. I'm surprised they were still making print magazines in 2012.
Oh yeah, they and it was a big deal when they went down. Yeah. And at that point, Nintendo wasn't even making the magazine themselves. They had Future making it for them.
So I don't know. I feel like that kind of thing. Like, what if a library? Like, we're in a digital age. We're right. approaching the point where some of things like video games that don't have a physical thing all the time.
I just don't understand how the magazine, them not letting it be out there for free, hurts their IP. That seems like, why don't they just say, oh, we've made these scans and we've donated them to archive.org.
Yes. You know, that would save a lot. Or, I mean, archive.org or the National Library of Japan. Like, you know, this is the kind of thing that I would like to be able to go to my local library and borrow, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing that I think it should be, because I could see it if it was still going. Like, if they were still publishing new magazines in 2016, I can sort of understand that. They would probably want to have their own site, their own archive, and have the traffic driven there, which maybe that's the plan. I don't know.
And if that's the plan, that's great. But Nintendo should issue those kind of comments rather than just
take down
stuff. Because nobody knew for 3 days. It was a big thing that Archive had all these issues. And Archive actually crashed once or twice because they were getting so much traffic. And then all of a sudden, one day, everybody went there, and there was nothing there. And there was no press release. Nintendo didn't say anything. And it was like that for, like, 3 days. And then Nintendo said, oh, yeah, we cease and desist them. And it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, why? Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know what gears are turning in a company that size.
Right.
But, it does seem a little bit odd. And the decision, like... They can't be just be making those decisions willy-nilly. I mean, like, they must have really good reasons. They just can't discuss them, I guess. It seems kind of odd. Again, like, if it was an ongoing thing, sure. But, does not seem to make a lot of sense. I feel like in the article that I read, there was mentions of comics, I think.
They did do a series of comics that were based on The Legend of Zelda that they paid an artist to do.
Right.
And those have come out as a compilation book now. Right.
So,
and I actually own a copy of that book. It's on my shelf in the other room.
So because the original Nintendo Power magazine was made by Nintendo and some of that material may be being repurposed into other things.
Right, that could be why.
You know, because I mean, because Nintendo's been around for so long, you're getting to the point where maybe there's a Super Mario art book coming out, you know, next year at Christmas that we know nothing about. Right. And those Nintendo Power magazines are just full of some of the art from this book, and Nintendo wants to be able to sell this book and make money. Like, there's all kinds of things I can think of as to why. I just think it would have been, like you said, a little bit nicer for them to come forward and say, like, well, here's the reasons. You know,
we're going to give you this, but we're going to take the comic pages out, and we're going to take out these things that we already sell because we don't want it to hurt our brand. But here's the magazine itself. There's other things Nintendo could do other than just be like, nope. And it wouldn't take a whole lot of effort on their part.
Yeah. History, too. I part of leaping through an old Nintendo Power magazine would be looking at the advertisements from the 80s.
When this went up online, I read like 4 or 5 of the issues. And it's great because the second issue of Nintendo Power is a Simon Belmont it's an actor dressed up as Simon Belmont, and he's holding Dracula's head. And it was a hugely controversial.
Oh, did we lose Lou?
When it came out, because it was marketed towards kids, and can you hear me?
Oh no, it just Skype just took a crap. That's all. Sorry. Oh,
okay, all right, that's all right. I was say, but they had this live action actor of Simon Belmont, and he's holding Dracula's head, and. It was usually controversial because the magazine was marketed towards kids, and when it showed up, kids had nightmares from it and complained, and Nintendo got a bunch of letters from it.
Yeah, I remember when they used to do advertisements like that, where the gaming graphics were so crappy that they had to do like live action or cartoon advertisements, because nowadays they just put like screenshots from the game actually in the advertisement.
That the other thing too is Nintendo Power, the first, I think it was the first 2 years of in business, Nintendo didn't want anything to do with it. They left it up to Nintendo US to do it, and they didn't even provide them with assets or anything. So they had their own art team doing a bunch of the art. That's why there's a bunch of knockoff-looking Marios in the magazine and Links in the magazine.
I always used to hate that, because as a young artist, I could tell when the drawing was like, whoa, that does not look like Nintendo made that.
My favorite thing was when I had the magazine as a kid, my mom came up with the idea, we bought tracing paper, and we would trace the big images of like Mega Man or Mario, and then she'd take them to work and photocopy them, and we'd put together my own coloring books.
Nice. I had an issue from, I don't remember what year it was, but do you remember Battletoads?
Yep.
That was a really hard game.
So it's to be really almost impossible.
Yeah, so I had one of the guides. Like, I had the Nintendo Power guide, where you'd open up the triple fold leaf, and it would show you the entire level. So you're like, okay, I need to duck here, jump here, spin there. You know,
yeah.
Memorize it all. Man, that game is brutal. Yeah, I don't remember liking that much. I remember I used to spend lots of time on these games, because I used to rent them.
Yeah.
From the local video store.
I lucked out as a kid. My mom dated a guy who owned the local video store.
Oh, nice.
So I could just go in and be like, yeah, I'm going to take these three home.
Dude.
And he would be like, yeah, okay.
God, that's like, oh, 80s heaven, 97.
I was spoiled as a kid. All our rentals were free. In fact, he used to get the VHS rental copies before, so that he could pick how many copies he wanted. They used to give him preview copies. I used to get preview copies of movies before they came out on VHS.
Nice.
We'd get them like 4 months in advance. So I was spoiled as a kid.
Man. Well, I tell you, I wish that I had access now, because what's happening this week in the last couple days that I'm seeing online from everyone is how much they're enjoying No Man's Sky. Have you picked up a copy yet?
I have not picked up a copy. When the trailers for it first came out, I was really excited. But the more I kept hearing about, like, what is this game, the less I was getting interested. And I've watched some gameplay now, and I've watched some people play. I don't know if it's for me. I appreciate what it's doing. It's really neat. I love the art style. There's no story, though. And I think that's what's going to kill it for me.
Yeah, so they approached it like there's about a 30-hour mission to get to the center of the universe. And I don't know what that is. I don't know what it's for. I don't want any spoilers if I ever do play.
Yeah.
But it's a very sandbox-like game. I didn't realize until I watched about 2 hours of Tangent Gaming on Twitch today. And I'm new to his stream, but I had a really difficult time trying to find a stream that wasn't tasteless, we'll say.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that people know what they're doing, but oh my God, like, some people, once they get on camera, are just obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't know enough about Twitch to just, you know, go through a ream of people I know and trust that might be playing this game. I only have a handful. All of the people I follow were offline this afternoon. So
yep.
When I was working on some, basically I was going through a lot of email for the Kickstarter, and I wanted to have something on in the background. So I found Tangent Stream, and it's cool. Apparently, I found this out through the Frogpants Tadpole, that he is a part of a larger stream team, and they are all fun and positive, and they kind of have like minds in that way. So I've got a few other streams to check out, which is awesome. I can't say that it was exciting watching him, but I had it on for 2 hours. Like, I wanted to see what was going to happen next. Essentially, he was mining and collecting stuff to upgrade his gear. And that's the kind of thing that will grab the OCD in me.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of glad I don't have access in that way, because it does seem like a huge time sink. I don't know if I would necessarily care about the story. I would think, though, that I would want to have some sort of goal as opposed to just walking around and collecting stuff. Because after watching him do it a few times, it's like, okay, man, like I can appreciate that you're doing this as efficiently as possible, but I don't know what your end goal is. Like, I'm assuming he was saving up for a ship or something, because you can you can upgrade ships. Apparently, you can craft stuff in the game too. I think you have to discover plans for upgrades and then craft the upgrades. Essentially, you're collecting a lot of minerals.
Right. I watched Games Radar is doing a day by day review because they didn't get a review copy. And the guy started and he played for 4 or 5 hours and then he put up a video on Games Radar and it was like about how he started the game and what he was doing in the game and his experiences with the game. And then they did a day two thing today, I think it was, where he was talking about how now that he understands how the game works, when he sat down today, he made his goal. You can get 300,000 credits for finding everything on a single planet. So he found a moon. And his idea was, a moon's really small. I'll go there, find all the plants, find all the life, find all the minerals, and get my 300,000 credits and buy the next ship upgrade. And he goes, that shouldn't take me more than an hour or two. According to him, it took him 7 hours.
Oh, my God. Well, they were there. I was looking into some tweets and stuff, and apparently over 10 million different species have been discovered in this virtual galaxy so far. And that's unique species. And that's currently on the planet, like our planet in real life. There are, I can't remember how many million people playing this game. Yeah. Their servers are crunching out crazy numbers. There was a lot of controversy, apparently. I didn't follow it super close because I tend not to read online blogs and stuff like that about gaming. I'll watch videos but all that stuff tends to be pretty positive because you're interviewing the creators and things like that. So I've seen some cool mainstream stuff where they were on like The Late Show and some other stuff. Maybe The Tonight Show, I can't remember. But apparently they had lied or given the impression that it was a multiplayer game or that you could potentially see other people. Now I've seen tweets.
You can't.
Well, no, and I've seen tweets from the creator saying that they've made changes already and that you can. But
it
seems like they're backpedaling.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I heard was is there's two players that found out that they were on the same planet at the same time while playing. And they were both playing on the same console and everything. And so they tracked down where they were, and the planets looked identical. And they were standing basically so they should have been seeing each other, and there was nobody there. So then it was rumored that one of them wasn't a PS Plus player. He was a regular player. So that player went in and afterwards bought a PlayStation Plus membership, went back into the game, and they still couldn't see each other. And then apparently Hello Games issued the things saying, oh, that's because we're having server issues.
Yeah, so I it's really difficult to say. I mean, it's a lot of he said, she said on both sides. Like, I can't come down on either side. I don't recall them ever. I mean, they've never said it was a multiplayer game. The sheer mathematical probability of running into somebody is like nil. So I don't know how these two guys managed to do it. And there's a part of me, and this is completely ignorant, but there's a part of me that wants to call bullshit on the players.
Well, like the reason they say they know that they were on the same planet was when that player found the planet, it had already been named and found.
Right.
And then when he landed there, he realized that the player was still there.
Yeah. How would you know that, though?
There's supposedly something in-game that lets you know you can talk to other players.
Hmm, interesting.
And that's how they knew where each other was.
Yeah. It seems to me, though, that, I mean, at launch like that, there's probably a lot of instancing going on with the servers.
Yeah. I'm sure.
So, I don't know. I know that they had stated that they've put in a scan for nearby players in the galaxy map, I think is what they said.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily... I was disappointed when I was reading up on the game and found out that even if you found somebody else, you would not be able to
do much
to see them and interact with them.
Yeah.
I think it would have been really cool to be able to play with friends. I don't necessarily think I wanted an MMO experience.
No.
But if you could not necessarily run into someone, but invite someone to play on the same server instance, so that they would bring their upgrades and your upgrades, and that you could potentially play with a buddy, like not a lot, not a whole crew, but just you and a friend could go around and say, all right, well, what are we doing today? Well, we're trying to upgrade my ship. We'll upgrade your ship tomorrow. Let's go do and have some cool fun, you know, fun discovering.
Exactly.
I think it would be kind of neat to share the experience with somebody. I found it very cool to watch Tangent do his thing. I don't know him, and he was just walking around collecting rocks, but it was really interesting because he would walk up and he would do a scan, and he'd be just like, huh, these scan results say that this stuff is underground. Well, this is a giant sandbox game, so let's dig a hole. So he starts chucking grenades, and he had to throw a dozen or more, and every time he threw one, it was digging the hole deeper. And then by the end of it, there was a cavern underground. And he dropped into this cavern and found this mother load of plutonium. Plutonium? Yeah. I think it was a P word. Anyway.
I think it is plutonium.
Yeah.
I think
that's there's a bunch of different elements. Some of them I think are made up, but a lot of them are just regular. But anyway, the reason why he was looking for plutonium, because he knew this one space station that he had flagged was buying plutonium at 105% the going rate. So he was playing it like the WoW auction house. He was going and finding plutonium and then dumping it all and getting extra money than he would have anywhere else. So he was using this to build up his cash stores. So when he dropped into this cavern and realized that the whole thing was glowing red with like plutonium stalactites, he was like, he jumped. Like he was like, woo, he got excited. And
exactly.
And I was excited with him. So like, and it was pretty, like everything sparkles and it's got cool. You collect mines with a laser. I mean, it's, it's basically like, you know, if you're the kind of person that likes to clean, you know, and you have to get every last little bit, this game is definitely for you. Because you walk into this, you know, this cool-looking cave and realize that half of the stuff in there you can blow up and collect. So you're just going to sit there like a Ghostbuster, you know, for 10 minutes. Just like, I'm going to take this, I'm going to take that, don't cross the streams, going to take that one. You know, like, it was really cool. Now, I didn't see him do anything with it. So I'm wondering if the grind is worth it. Because I watched him for 2 hours. I didn't sit down and do it specifically, but he was on in the background for 2 hours. I believe he did two turn-ins and made 500K at each turn-in.
Yeah.
And ships are like into the millions to buy new ones and probably very high for fancy ships and stuff.
Yeah.
So it would take a long time to upgrade your ship. I was watching one other person. I don't remember her name. I followed her because she, again, had a very positive, fun stream. She had to go, but she had found a ship that looked really neat. And what I liked about the game at that point was that she just saw something she liked, and you could walk up and find out more about it and decide whether you wanted to find one, to buy one, what it would be worth. Like, you could decide, oh, do I want to save up for this? And it was like $25 million or something like that. It was crazy. But it was this cool ship that looked like a grasshopper. Like, it had like a design to it that was appealing. And there was no other reason other than, like, it looks cool. I want one, you know? So the creator in me and the OCD in me think that it would be really fun. And I really enjoyed those aspects of Mass Effect and Black Flag. Like, Black Flag had fast travel. I didn't do it. I really enjoyed just kind of being out in the open ocean with my pirate ship. And then you're sailing along when you're closer to the end of the game, when you don't have to worry about a whole lot. And you're like, oh, I've got this big-ass pirate ship, and that little frigate over there looks like it's in the wrong shipping lane today. Boys, you know, fire at will. And you're like, that was fun. But there's not a lot of combat that I saw. There was a lot of just node collecting so far. So now I was also watching someone that was specifically doing that for 2 hours. So, I mean, maybe if I find somebody that was out looking for trouble, it would be more of an experience.
My thing is I'm going to wait and see what all the reviews say. And I'm not big on buying games when they first come out anyway.
Yeah.
I'll probably give it a couple of months. And if it goes on sale, maybe I'll grab it.
I've heard lots of people waiting for Steam.
Yeah. And even what I've heard is I'm not in a rush. It doesn't seem, it seems like, it looks like it could be fun, but it also could be a huge time suck, and I really don't need a big time suck.
Yeah, and that's, I like the idea of being able to play a game for short periods.
Right.
So, but, and if, I mean, this is the kind of thing though, like, that's what I liked about World of Warcraft is like, if you wanted to raid, you'd have to put in the time and you have to make sure that you got 2 or 3 hours available on a Sunday night with your crew and all that kind of stuff. Or you could just build your garrison and do your own quests and stuff like that. So if you only wanted to play a half an hour a day, you could totally do it.
You could.
You know?
Yeah.
And this game seems like the same sort of thing. Like, if you really want to gung for the center of the universe, which is apparently what the story is, and collect all these information nodes and learn the language and stuff like that, then you could do that. And if you go on a beeline and just strictly do what the quests tell you, apparently it's about 30 hours. The chances of me doing that completely undistracted by shiny blue planet number 5 are nil. But that means that if I just find a planet that's got some cool stuff, like for example, if I landed and the wildlife looks like it did in the trailer, I'm going to stay on that planet for a while. The character designer in me, the artist in me, is going to want to wander around that planet with funky looking dinosaurs and weird birds and be just like, how many of these can I find? Right? Like, I would love that. The planets that I saw, and it could be just luck of the draw, were nothing but rocks and weird looking worms. Like, there was nothing exciting on these planets.
Yeah, the ones I saw on the videos I've seen were like weird looking deer with like spiny backs.
Yeah, see, like, that would be cool. So I'm going to go back and watch some other stuff, just kind of see if people kind of get places. And I'm wondering too, like, if the solar systems obey any kind of, well, I mean, if they're doing all the mathematical stuff, if they're obeying how solar systems work, then if you're on a planet that's super close to the sun or super far away from the sun in that system, it's going to be nothing but rubble anyway.
Right.
You'd have to find something in an Earth-like sort of distance from that sun, the right temperature, like, to support the kind of life that would be exciting to see, you know, unless there's underwater stuff, then, like, you, so there might only be one or two planets in a system that would have cool life on it. Everything else is just going to be mining nodes. I don't know. I'm really curious about it, and I was talking with Ryan the other day about it, and discussing, like, you know, PC versus PlayStation 4, and he's really enjoying the kickback experience on the couch because it's such a chill game.
Yeah.
Like, it's not edge of your seat stuff. It's pretty relaxing from what I can see. I don't know that I would want to sit in front of a computer monitor with a mouse or even with a, you know, a controller and go that way. Not that you can't hook up a gaming PC to a television and play it in your living room, I guess.
Do it every day.
Yeah. I'm assuming a PC version would probably give you some advantage graphic-wise.
Probably.
I mean, it all looks stylized, but the frame rate would probably be a little bit better.
My PC is not top of the line. It's not bottom of the line either. I run most things on ultra settings.
Yeah, and I'm wondering,
And my video card is like 4 years old.
Yeah. I mean, so, if you're a really big console gamer, then, you know, spending, what is it now, $400 for a PS4?
Something like that. And there's a new one coming out. There's a new PlayStation 4 that's going to be announced in the next couple of weeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're saying it's going to be a 4K PlayStation.
Yeah.
And it's going to cause the 4s to go down in price.
Yeah. Ryan had suggested that if I did want to get into it, I could look at buying one of those secondhand, like a PlayStation 4 secondhand when the Neo comes out, because people are going to be wanting to off their stuff.
Yep.
But I don't want to wait that long. Like, you know, I don't have the money right now, nor do I have the time, but if I did, I would likely just spend the $500, get a PS4, a copy of the game and play in PlayStation. Cause if cross platform stuff doesn't matter, like if you can't see other people anyway, it doesn't really matter where I play.
Right.
You know, I mean, economically it makes more sense for me to, you know, get a PC because I could use that for other things like streaming artwork and, you know, doing that kind of thing.
Right.
Plus, I do want to play Legion, World of Warcraft, when it comes out. I resubscribed only to find out that my old computer, the little laptop that could, cannot play WoW anymore.
Really?
I get like 6 frames a second. It's terrible. And it's on like ultra low bullshit settings, and I just it's unplayable, and I can deal with 12. It sounds horrible. I know everybody that's a gamer out there is going, what, 12? But look, 12 isn't choppy. 12 frames a second is what some animation is run on, so like I can play the way that I play Warcraft, which is questing and, you know, doing stuff on 12 or 24 frames a second, fine. It's not a problem for me. I'm mostly in it in just the story. It's not looked good on my computer for years, so I'm not worried about it being pretty or not.
I understand.
Yeah. Well, I guess we can wrap things up here and move on into the Internet Minute, which is, of course, brought to you by Patreon. If you'd like to support the show directly, you can go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe and become a patron. If you do so, it's completely up to you, and it helps pay for new software, for editing and posting the podcast, for hosting costs, just because there are over 200 episodes now, so keeping those up does cost a little bit of money. You get access to the Slack chat, which is a really cool place for everybody to hang out in between shows. Lots of like-minded people in there, so head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, and if you would like, become a patron. Well, my Internet Minute is pretty short. As a matter of fact, it's only a minute and a half. The Arrival teaser trailer was released today or yesterday. I can't remember.
I think it was yesterday.
It looks awesome. And I don't know if I want to see another trailer. I think I'm okay with this one. There's another one coming on the 16th. The movie comes out on the 11th of November.
It gives me enough that I'm interested. I think they need one more trailer to sell me. They don't need to show me what the aliens look like in the trailer.
Nope. Agreed. So,
but they need to give me an idea of whether it's going to have any action or if it's going to all be heavy sci-fi. That's what I need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there's going to be much action.
See, that's what I'm hoping for, is that there won't be. I'm hoping it's going to be a straight up like sci-fi like drama.
Yeah. I don't need it to be as boring as Contact, but the idea of, like, there's a great quote from the trailer that says, language is the first weapon drawn in a conflict.
Right.
And I thought that was cool. I like Amy Adams. I like Jeremy Renner. Not a fan of Whitaker, but, you know, depends on what role he's in.
I've seen stuff in him. He's good. I've seen stuff in him and he's really bad.
Yeah. So I like this kind of film. I like sci-fi movies that make you think. The ships that they showed in the trailer were cool, and there's some sort of weird, like, gravity thing happening in the trailer, too. Like, there's a lot of questions.
Yeah.
So it looks different, you know, so I'm excited for that. And I don't know, it's one of those things that I would like to go into the movie hopeful.
Right.
So, yeah. But I would say check it out. There's definitely no spoilers in the trailer. So if you're sick and tired of Hollywood showing you the whole movie in the trailer, don't worry. There's not much here. But it's if you're a sci-fi fan, I think it's pretty exciting. So what about you, Lou? What is your pick?
My pick is if you like Rick and Morty, recently the cast of Rick and Morty, or some of the cast of Rick and Morty, sat down and did an improvised episode with no script. And it's literally like three of the voice actors and the creator sitting there, and the creator just throws ideas at them, and they just impromptu make a script with jokes while they're sitting there. And it's actually pretty funny.
Cool.
And it's funny to see because Rick and Morty are both voiced by the same voice actor.
I didn't know that.
And I didn't either. I thought that... Dan Harmon did one voice and his friend did the other, but it's not. The friend does both voices. So you watch him there and somebody chimes in and then he both does the dialogue for Morty and Rick without breaking a sweat. It's like he doesn't even like have to pause to change his voices. It's like one sentence is Rick and then like without skipping a beat changes to Morty and bam, he's doing Morty's voice. It's really fun to watch.
Wow. I mean, voice actors are so talented anyway, but then to have a conversation with the two characters that you are making, like that's just nuts.
Also, I have one other quick Internet Minute pick. Luke Cage's new trailer is out.
Yes, I did see this before the show and it looks violent and awesome.
I wanted to see it, but I wasn't as excited about it as I am some of the other Netflix Marvel shows.
Mm.
But now I'm sold. I'm excited.
Yeah. Is there a trailer for Iron Fist yet?
Just the teaser trailer that they showed at Comic-Con.
I'll have to go look for that. I don't think I saw that yet.
It's real quick. It basically gives you an idea of who Iron Fist is. They show no action, no anything. It's just kind of like like clips of what his story is going to be.
Huh. Okay. Well, I know zero about Iron Fist. And actually, I don't know anything about Luke Cage other than what I know from Jessica Jones.
Oh, okay.
So I've never read the comics. I know what he is and his powers just through pop culture.
He is basically Marvel's interpretation of blaxploitation from the 60s, 50s and 60s.
Right. Right.
And literally, that's when his character was created, was in the 60s.
Yeah. So, I like the idea, though, and I like the fact that they're diversifying the superheroes now in mainstream media. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, the X-Men have done it for years in comics. Yeah. Like, there's X-Men are from all different nationalities and cultures and stuff, which I think is challenging to do in film. I completely forgot to mention that I watched X-Men Apocalypse. I'll have to talk about it next week. But one of the challenges of that movie is that there's all these different languages and all these different locations. And it runs like a Bond film with the number of locations that they hit. So, you know, like to diversify and focus on just one of these characters, just like, Marvel's coming out with a Black Panther movie, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. So like I think it's awesome. I want to see more of it. Because once again, DC is making some pretty stale shit. And I'm excited that Marvel's
I have not seen Suicide Squad yet, but I think I'm going to see it this weekend.
I'm hearing mixed things.
I've heard people saying it's not the greatest thing ever. It's not as bad as the critics are saying. It's just an action movie, and I can take that.
Yeah.
If it's just an okay movie, and I get to see the Joker and Deadshot do stuff and Harley Quinn run around, I'm okay with that. I'm not expecting a whole lot.
Yeah, I hear Harley Quinn steals the show. I think there might be some diamonds in the rough.
Yeah.
But any of these films, Justice League, Suicide Squad, they get like reshoots for adding jokes. Just if you're gonna make something dark and broody, just make it dark and broody. Just commit, damn it.
Yeah.
Like, don't backtrack and try to market stuff. Like a lot of the stuff I didn't get to talk about this week were a lot of the indie films and stuff that I had been watching on Netflix. And one of the reasons I've had this groove is because I can't predict how they're gonna end. I don't know what's gonna happen. Whereas mainstream rom-coms and action movies, I can figure it out before, you know, act three.
Yeah.
And it drives me nuts. So yeah, I think we're better off. If DC wants to go dark, fine, go dark, but just don't backtrack. I feel like Marvel has got this awesome split between the kind of movie that you get with Captain America, Civil War, Avengers. It's action, it's adventure, it's what, PG-13? I can't remember.
Most of them are.
Yeah, it's superheroes, so there's not a lot of blood and guts. It's mostly punching. But then you get what Marvel has decided to do on Netflix with Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Luke Cage, which is violent, like 80s action, machine gun, blood everywhere stuff. The grittier side of Marvel is happening on Netflix as opposed to the big screen.
Yeah,
and I think they nailed it. Like, I think that's the great way to do it.
Yep, and I'll be really curious what they do when they give Punisher his own show.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Punisher, period, but yeah, it'll be interesting.
I mean, he was one of my favorite parts of Daredevil Season 2.
Oh, I agree.
So I'm curious as well. I think they're going to end up forcing him to tone down his behavior a slight bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be quite as ruthless as he was in Daredevil.
No,
I think they're going to let him... I think it's going to be a reflect of what he learned from Daredevil.
Mm.
I think he's still going to be a ruthless killer that takes out the bad guys, but I think he's going to be like, you know, the guy that puts the puppy in the other room out of the way so it doesn't get hit by gunfire.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No, I in the world we live in today, I think they have to be very careful with how they handle that.
Yeah.
It's touchy subject for sure. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email the show and tell me how wrong I was at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, or find us my name on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan. Everything I am up to online is happening at joelduggan.com. I am going to be at the Dartmouth Comic Arts Festival this weekend. That's Sunday, August 14th. Doors open from 11 to 5. If you are a local to Halifax, Dartmouth, come say hi. I am at table 31. Just do a quick search for Decaf online. Decaf 2016 is the hashtag, and joelduggan.com is where I have all that information. Also, check out Piper Thibodeau on Kickstarter. It is forgepublishing.com is the best way. You'll get a link right to the Kickstarter from there, and then you can explore all the options. And let us know what you think, because I love getting feedback from backers and potential backers on the Kickstarter. It helps us kind of mold the campaign as best we can over the course of the next week and a half. There are currently 12 days left, so don't wait. Back now, because the closer we get to goal, the more cool stuff that we can do for the people that are backing the project. Lou, where can people find you online?
The easiest place to find me is Twitter. I am at Busy Zombie Lord, and you can check out my show, Zombies Ate My Podcast, where this week we're going to discuss a lot of crazy zombie news that's happened in the for TV, movies, and stuff that's coming out. Stuff's coming. Like, exciting stuff's coming.
Nice.
And we're also, the following week, the plan is to cover a movie. We're going to put up a thing to help us pick the movie we cover. So,
nice, like a straw poll or something?
Yeah, that's, thank you. That was the word I was trying to think. We're putting up a straw poll with a couple of movies, and the fans get to pick.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.